Chapter 6 Numa Vessel Raleigh. Captain Brooks stood on the Raleigh's bridge as the windows slowly blackened from soot and the paint began to blister on the outer edge of the hull. They'd sailed in through the first waves of fire, cutting a path like an icebreaker in the Arctic. But as they neared the Alpha Star platform, the flames became impenetrable, 40 feet high, half hidden in the black smoke. They'd stopped 200 yards from the shattered rig, deployed the submarine, and spent 20 intense minutes waiting and blasting at the water around them with the ship's firefighting hoses. When the heat became too much for the men on the deck, the nozzles were locked in place and left on full blast. The result was a bubble of safety in the middle of the firestorm, with an outside temperature approaching 200 degrees. Brooks looked on as the ship's executive officer used the mast cameras to search for Kurt and Joe. "They're 10 minutes late already," the executive officer said. Brooks didn't respond. Instead, he turned the windshield wipers on to scrape away the grime that was slowly blocking their view. It wasn't much help, smearing everything. "Any sign of them on the cameras?" "Nothing on either wavelength." "They're probably keeping below the surface," Brooks said. "Use the sonar array. Angle it directly to port." The executive officer switched to a second control panel and powered up the bow-mounted sonar emitter, which was contained in a bulbous housing beneath the front of the ship. At the touch of a button, it began sending pulsed sonar signals in a wide band, sweeping the turbulent waters between the Raleigh and the imperiled drilling platform. "There must be something wrong with the sonar," the XO said. "The readout is distorted." Brooks looked over at the sonar display. He saw a pixelated image with areas of gray and black. Other sections of the image were clean, including an area showing wreckage on the bottom. "It's not the sonar unit, it's the water. Or more accurately, the bubbles in the water. Those are walls of gas coming up from below." The radio squawked before the XO could reply. "Raleigh, this is Zavala," a cheery voice announced. "We're on the surface 50 feet from your stern, ready to unload survivors." Brooks grabbed the microphone. "Great job," he said. "How many did you find?"
5, Joe replied. "But we're not done yet."
"The hell you aren't," Brooks thought. "I'm putting a stop to the risks being taken. Sit tight, we'll haul you aboard."
"Negative," Joe said. "I have to go back."
"The safety of the ship and crew takes priority at this point." Joe did not relent. "If we leave now, you'll be leaving one of the crew behind. Kurt went for the lifeboat. He'll be waiting for a pickup."
Brooks turned his eyes to the wreckage of the oil rig. The part of the rig housing the control center had broken off slowly and sunk. The rest stood tall, engulfed in flames, like a proud tree in a forest fire. Equipment and pieces of the structure were falling from up high, weaker materials bending and melting in the heat, dropping from the structure like meteors. Austin's reputation may have preceded him, but Brooks now thought Kurt had to be certifiably crazy.
"If he lives through this, I'm ordering Kurt to have a full psych eval," he grunted. "Get the survivors on board and go look for him. We're pulling the ship back at least 0.5 mile.
"We'll meet you out there," Joe promised. "I'm approaching the lower cargo hatch. Send some of the crew to open it and get these people inside. As soon as they're off the sub, I'm going back."